This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Oh, welcome to The Garden Show here on Zoomer Radio with Charlie Dobbin. I am Dean Holland. How are you this morning, Charlie?
I'm very well. I love that dance we do.
Yeah. And I am always impressed, especially at 9 in the morning, that she can go that high. That is one soprano who knows her stuff. What's happening in your garden this morning?
What do you got going on? Sleepy at my end of the world. We did get snow, and it is pretty chilly. I think it's about minus 16 right now. So we're white with little more little flakes coming down. Funny winter. It's warm, mild, cold, really cold.
Yeah, it's been the same here. I've said that it's been doing this dance on either side of zero all winter long. We get the snow, we lose the snow. We get the snow, we lose the snow. We have quite a bit up here now in the Collingwood area. Yeah, the ski hills are in great shape. And we're sitting at only about minus 10 this morning. Not as cold as you.
Balmy.
Yeah, it is. It is balmy. Okay, let me give – I know you have an announcement, but I want to give those numbers out because we'd love for you to give us a call with any questions of regarding indoor gardening or outdoor gardening. And if you live in Toronto, the number is 416-360-0740 or toll-free anywhere outside Toronto. It's toll-free anywhere in the province of Ontario, 1-866-740-4740. And do let Carlos know if you're a first-time caller. He will let us know, and I will give you your garden wings. And, of course, we want you to call often. We want you to call early, please, please. And one question per call. Okay, what is your announcement? You said you got something to tell us about.
I do. And actually, I just realized I have two announcements. Just want to remind everybody about CD Saturday coming up on March the 4th in London. So it's the London Middlesex Master Gardeners presenting CD Saturday all day, 10 till 3 at the Carling Heights Community Centre in London. They've got some great speakers. They've got a great seed swap going on, vendors, garden clubs, apparently yummy food and drinks, all for only a $5 cash admission. So do go there if you can on the 4th. And then just a reminder as well that March the 8th, I will be Zooming with the Riverdale Horticultural Society. My topic is sexy soil, and everybody's excited about that.
Yes, indeed. I want to hear more about sexy soil before the show is out. How's that? But for the time being, we just have to pause. We have to hear some important messages, but we will be right back with much more here on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Oh, yeah, here we are back with The Garden Show and raring to go, and the lines are open. I got lots of room in the lines. 416-360-0740. Give us a call. That's the Toronto number. Or the toll-free number if you live outside Toronto, anywhere in the province of Ontario. Give us a call, 1-866-740-4740. Charlie has got her, I call it your like Sherlock Holmes gardening cap on. You know? And so you're ready to, hear your issue and figure out what's going on.
Yeah, yeah, and sometimes people share good tips as well. So remember, it's not all about what's wrong in your garden, but what's maybe right in your garden. This snow will melt. Spring will come. So, you know, I feel like we're on the cusp of, you know, the next season. So I'm sure there's lots going on. I know I'm just itching to get dirty.
I am as well, but I have to say that because the snow has come and gone this season, every time it snows now, I think I keep thinking that this is so important for the plants to have this. It feels like a blanket, you know, like it's important for them to have that sleep, I guess. But
Exactly. The snow does help keep plants dormant, which is what we want at this time of year. And, you know, think about it, right? Go down to the microscopic level on it. What is snow? Snow are little tiny, tiny, tiny flakes of ice. But each of those flakes, as we know, is an individual with amazing shapes. And in between all those little prongs of ice is air. And it's actually the air that's doing the so-called insulating for the plants. So it is a good thing. We do like that. It's not so much of a blanket to keep plants warm. It's more just insulation to protect plants from extremes, right? You know, we've seen some huge temperature swings in 24-hour periods multi-times this winter, which is very hard on the flora and the fauna.
Mm-hmm. And do you, in your opinion, do you think that that's going to, do you have any idea whether that may or may not affect what the bloom season looks like because of the fluctuation? Is it hard? It must be hard to say.
Well, yeah, it's hard to say for sure, but generally speaking, plants are pretty smart. They've gone through this before. So they are able to start to poke above ground. A little bit of green starts to come up on a mild day, and then it gets cold, and the plant just stops. Now, you might end up with a little bit of frost burn on those little tips that emerge, like daffodil leaves, for example. I know several people have bulbs that have emerged above ground. So you might see a little bit of frost damage, but you should still see the full glory of the flowers once we get into consistent warmth.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, let's go to our first caller. We have I have Astrid on the line, and she is calling from Fenland Falls. Welcome to the Garden Show, Astrid.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
And thank you for taking my call. I have
our pleasure.
Hello?
Go ahead.
I have a hibiscus plant in a pot about 13 inches in diameter and about the same in height. I've had it for 5 years in the same pot, and I bring it always inside before the frost. Well, right now, it does not look very happy. The leaves, they shrivel. And I don't really know why. I watered it regularly but sparingly in the winter. What can I do?
Well, if you've been successful for 5 years, I wonder what's different this year. Any drafts, perhaps?
No, no draft.
Okay, and lots of light?
Yeah. It's okay. It has a good spot, and it gets a lot of light. And yeah. I was thinking maybe it's time for me to transplant it in a slightly bigger pot.
You could double check that it's not an issue of too much water. Sometimes when leaves go limp, it can be one extreme or the other, too much water or not enough water. So just, you know, stick your fingers in the soil and clarify that. If you can tilt the pot over, I'm assuming the pot has drainage holes. So tilt it over, see if roots are growing out of the drainage holes. If they are, that is an indication that, yes, it's probably root-bound after 5 years. Hibiscus are very vigorous plants. They tend to have lots of roots. If you give it a bigger pot, which is an option, right, you can go up to a 14-inch or maybe if you can even find a 16-inch pot, you can do that with fresh potting soil. Keep in mind, though, the plant is going to get bigger. Like, if you have room for the plant to be that big, then give it a bigger pot. Otherwise, what I would do, and I've done this before with hibiscus, because, you know, you want to keep them happy, but you don't really want them taking over the whole house, is tilt it down, you know, onto newspaper, get it out of the pot, take a look at the roots, and you get out a butcher knife or a saw, and then you saw a bunch of roots off of the root. If it's a really, you know, solidly root-bound plant, chop off a lot of the outer roots. Meanwhile, you wash the pot that it was in, give that a scrub, get some fresh soil into that pot, get that plant back into the same pot, but with fewer roots, and room for some nice fresh soil. And usually, generally, the plant will respond very positively to that experience.
Yeah, and what kind of soil would I use?
I would just use a regular potting mix. You'll see lots out there now because we're getting into that gardening season. So you're seeing the big bags, all the garden centers, the Costcos, everybody's got the big, 30, 50, 70 liter bags. So just get a good quality. Again, it's one of those things, you get what you pay for. So go for one of the, Miracle-Gro makes great soil mixes, Pro Mix, great mixes. So there's lots out there. Just make sure it is a potting mix, not garden soil.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for your time. And I love your show and I enjoy it every Saturday.
Thank you for calling.
Great. Thanks, Astrid. Yeah. I was going to say, it sounds like it needs some of that sexy soil that you were talking about there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
But keep in mind, there's a difference between sexy soil and potting mix, because actually all the potting mixes that we buy now in the bag have no soil in them at all.
Ah, okay. So no soil at all. It's just potting mixes.
It's all based on peat moss and vermiculite and perlite. So that's why it's so important to recognize the difference. When we buy a bag of potting mix, it is completely sterile. It should have no life in it whatsoever. It also has virtually no nutrient in it. It is strictly a media to anchor the plant, to give the root something to grow in so that it can stand up in the pot. That's why fertilizing is so important. And I didn't mention fertilizer to Astrid, but we are at that time of year where it's important to think about fertilizing. It's, March is around the corner, and I always use March as my sort of beginning date to start fertilizing through until September. So even if it's once a month, mixed according to directions, hibiscus, in case of hers, we probably love a dose of fertilizer.
Okie dokie. Okay, we have to take our next break, but when we come back, we'll have much more right here on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And we're back here on The Garden Show, and we have some callers on the line. Let's get right to that. We're going to North York now. We've got Maureen on the line. Welcome to The Garden Show, Maureen.
Good morning. Good morning, Dean. Good morning, Charlie. It's like being in a snow globe here right now.
And is it? Yes, a snow globe.
It's all coming down. I'm looking out the big window. I'm glad I'm inside and not outside. But my question is about pussy willows. Always around this time of the year, I look forward to getting a nice big bouquet of pussy willows. I just love them. And usually what I do is I try to prevent the leaves from coming out. I just put a little tiny bit of water to give like humidity. But I was wondering, and I hope this isn't a dumb question, if I let them leaf, would they grow, would I get roots? Would I be able to plant them?
Yes, and that is not a dumb question. No, definitely. You treat pussy willow stems just like you would treat a cut flower bouquet. So a clean vase, fresh water, and they will grow roots pretty quickly. I've had them grow roots when how you use pussy willows inside of an outdoor planter in the spring with, some bulbs and some, Eastery sort of joy into a pot, and you jam some pussy willow stems in. They'll grow roots in the pot as well. And then you can transplant onto your property if you've got a big property, because pussy willow shrubs get very large.
Oh, they get very large, eh? Well, I'll put it in a corner where I don't usually plant very much.
Yeah, and of course, we control the size because we go in and cut them down every spring just for the same reason you're talking about, is how much we love having them in the house and outside the house. So you can control a pussy willow to some extent, but they do grow about 3 feet a year.
Okay. Thank you, Charlie. Appreciate it. Love your show. Look forward to coffee and the garden show every Saturday.
Thanks, Maureen.
Charlie, you actually, Maureen reminded me of an email that you got that I want to bring up to order here. And that's from Irene, and because she cut into a tomato this week. She sent you some pictures. She found a great surprise inside. She found a whole bunch of seeds inside the tomato that were all rooting. right? And yeah. so they were all sprouting. And so, A, she wasn't sure whether she should eat the tomato. Mm-hmm. And the other thing she was wondering is if these could be planted. And so, again, like it looks to me like, my goodness, she's got scores of little seedlings that are sprouting and doing their thing inside the tomato. And so how do you weigh in on this?
It's great, actually. Irene sent some great photos. Number one, don't be afraid to eat a tomato where the seeds are growing inside. It's all perfectly edible. None of it will hurt you whatsoever. But it is kind of surprising when it happens. And I think we've all seen one or two seeds germinate inside the tomato, but she literally has, 150. So it's quite an amazing sight. Just so you know, logically, the question should be, why don't seeds sprout inside a tomato? It seems kind of perfect. It's nice and moist. It's dark. Temperature is nice and, room temperature. Why don't the seeds sprout all the time? Well, tomatoes naturally produce a chemical that inhibits the germination of the seeds inside the tomato. And in this case, obviously, this particular tomato neglected to make that chemical and all the seeds are growing. So bottom line, don't worry about eating it. Enjoy it. She wondered about trying to plant some, and I said, well, you can go ahead and try planting them. You've got to get out some nice moist seed mix, a soil that's not just a potting soil, but actually a seed starting mix, nice and moist with the tweezers. She's going to have to pick out all those little seedlings and just stand, just basically lay them on the surface of the soil. The roots will go down. It is a bit early to start tomatoes. I'm not starting my tomato seeds yet. It's still February. So the main thing is, if you are going to be starting any baby tomatoes now, make sure you've got some grow lights or really, really bright window somewhere where these plants can grow inside until we're frost-free. So that's the one important thing, because tomatoes, they can really take off on you. We're not putting them outside for a couple of months, and they can be 2 feet tall by that time.
Okay. And so you don't want them to be that tall when you transplant them.
Well, no, ultimately you do want them to be that tall. So there's an advantage to having them that big before they go out, but it's a lot to work with. You need a lot of room and a lot of light. Otherwise, they'll just be thin and they'll be falling over and like from lack of light. So you want them stout and solid and green, and it's lights that are going to make the difference there.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have we're going to Toronto now. We have Hildy on the line. Welcome to the Garden Show, Hildy.
Hello.
Hi. Hi there.
Hi. Oh, good. I got through. Nice to be on this call. I listen to it every Saturday, like your other callers. Every Saturday morning, you're on my radar. So I heard Charlie say, I've got two things, but really the most important, I think, is the sexy soil question I have, which I'm thinking, Riverdale Horse Society, I'm going to come and attend there. I'm not a member, but I will find out and go when she's there next week, right?
Yeah, it's March the 8th, Hildy, and I will announce to everybody how to join in on the Zoom event. At this point, I don't even know exactly what time it is. It's probably, it's either 7 or 7:30 on March 8th. And I'll double check on the break here, but I'm pretty sure you can just email, and I'll give you the email address before we finish the show today as well.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear it's on Zoom, because that means we may have snow. I don't want to drive around. So, good.
Yeah.
Thank you. So the sexy soil question I have today, because I can't wait, when we had the warm weather a couple of 3 days last week, I started getting antsy about the compost. I create so much vegetable and fruit compost in my kitchen on a daily basis, and I've been dropping it down the chute all winter, but I'm anxious to get it into my allotment garden. I have some composters there. They need to be emptied out because they're finished, but I want to start collecting it again. And I took quite a heavy. I have to take my shopping cart in there to haul it in. But it's instant plastic bags because the composters have to be emptied. So is there any way to sort of do it inside? Not really, I don't want to, but how do I do it in the winter? How would you do it in the winter if you have a lot of compost?
Okay, so everybody's different what they've got sort of access to. Back when I lived in Richmond Hill, prior to moving to where I live now, I had four composters in my yard. Three of them were kind of far from the back door, and one was right at the back door. And the one at the back door was strictly for the winter, because that was, you know, how you're just not going to go out too far with your you know, coffee grounds in the middle of winter. But if it's handy, you will. So I always, every fall, would prepare by emptying the one that was right at the back door, filling the ones that were not at the back door for the winter. And then that way, all winter, I could just pop all my mango peels and bananas and all that stuff into the close by one. If you don't have a receptacle to drop all your stuff into in the winter, you could, I mean, yeah, again, it kind of depends. A dark green plastic bag can act like a composter in the winter. And some people I know also will just take all their bits of vegetables and fruits, and if you have a freezer that's big enough, they'll just bag up daily all their little bits and pieces, stick them in the freezer, and once they've collected a bunch of this frozen vegetable and fruit matter, take it all out and dump it in the composter at that point. But I think the main thing is you have to have a receptacle ready to go in the fall to take your stuff either throughout the winter or early in the spring. So that's probably your biggest challenge right now, is emptying one of those composters so you can fill it again. But I would, you know, just hold it in green garbage bags unless there's an issue around mice. And you know what I mean? There's always the little varmints that might get really excited. Though, I mean, mice used to make nests in my composters all the time.
Yeah, they do that in the allotment garden. There are little varmints there, but I just pray that, okay, they don't smell it and they don't come around, but they probably will. And I don't want, I hate to see it strewn all over. So as soon as we get warm weather, as soon as I can move that compost out, the finished compost, I will be doing that. You had pre-planned your composting thing. I didn't think about it because I'm getting old now, and I thought, oh, I might not keep this garden, but I can't give it up yet. So
yeah, and keep in mind, the mice won't eat the stuff in the compost. They're not interested in eating banana peels. What they're using it for is the warmth, because all that's, it's all decomposing, and as it decomposes, this is where soil starts getting sexy. As it decomposes, it's biology, and it is a, it's a reaction, and it produces heat. And that heat is what attracts the little varmints to nest in the composters. What you need is a cat, because the cats know that the mice are in there, and they'll just sit outside the composter and wait for the mice to come out. And as they come out, they just catch them one at a time.
I'm picturing that. Yeah, that is cute. Yeah, I've seen a cat inside, just knows there's a mouse in the fireplace and just sitting there, and she actually got it. She played with it for a long time.
They can be very patient, cats, and it's just in their DNA.
Very good. Okay, well, and another soil, sandy soil. How do I get, because they're all not, I have a plant that's, it's a Senecio crassissimus, and it likes sandy soil, of course, but I tried with some soil one time, and I don't know. It went clay hard. It went really hard, the sandy. I mixed sandy and something else. So I don't know. How do you get sandy soil for succulent plants?
The challenge with sandy soil is it depends on what kind of sand. So you've got play sand, which is the stuff we buy to put in the sandbox for the kids. And it's very, very fine. It's almost like dust. And then there's horticultural sand, which is a much bigger grain. So there's gravel in there, and there's large grains of sand. And that's what you need if you're going to try and produce a well-drained soil, is you need horticultural sand. Avoid play sand. It's way too fine of particles. So, you know, chunky. I've been known to add gravel to my clay soil back in Richmond Hill just to try and break up the clay and provide some drainage. So the bigger the particle sizes you can add to a clay soil, the better the drainage. And remember, organic matter of any kind always helps, like your compost or, you know, your compost manure that you buy in a bag.
Yeah. Where do I get horticultural sand?
You should be able to get that at a garden center. Or even in the spring, you should be able to get it at the Home Depots and the home stores.
Okay. I guess I used play sand because mine must have been fine. It went like cement. It's been in the pot. Plants are growing in it. These are house plants I'm talking about now, you know, mostly succulents. But I think I could do better because I want to repot them soon.
Gotcha. Okay, thanks for the call there, Hildy, and all the best with your compost and such.
Sneaking in those extra questions.
Yeah. Okay, we're gonna go to Midland now. Yeah, we have Joanne on the line. Welcome to the Garden Show, Joanne. Oh, and we lost Joanne. So let's go to Wilma in the town of Holstein, which is, I think, just north of Mount Forest. Is that right? Welcome to the Garden Show, Wilma.
Yes, it is.
How's the snow there, Wilma? Well, how much snow you got?
We've got about 6 or 8 inches maybe on the level. And it's snowing fine stuff right now, but not bad for a winter.
What's going on in your garden, Wilma?
Well, not much in my garden, but I'm contemplating starting some petunias. Is it too early or now?
Now. If anything, it might be too late.
Yeah, I wondered that. I just came across them in the freezer the other day, and that's what spurred me. But I'm wondering if it is too late, yeah.
Petunias from seed, right, we're talking?
Yes, they're seeds, yes.
I would still give it a try, but I would do it today.
Okay.
I know that with geraniums, as an example, we want to get those seeds planted like at Christmas.
Yeah.
So many, and begonias as well. So I'd have to just look up petunias, but I would for now get them in the ground or get those seeds into some soil, you know, with some heat below. I find my seed germination is so much better with a very low heating pad beneath. You know, with a towel in between. You know, you don't want it too hot, but just providing that bottom heat speeds up germination phenomenally.
Could they stay in the freezer for till next year?
Again, I'm not sure because all seeds are different. They all react differently to different. They're species specific. Let me check. I'll report back.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Wilma.
Thanks.
Yeah. I guess are there? We're talking about seeds sprouting, and you know, tomatoes is too early, and and other ones, petunias is too late, and geraniums is way too late. So, is there a good place to check, or how do you figure out which seeds you should start when? And I guess it depends on where you live.
Partially. Also, remember the seed packages will usually tell you on when to get them started. Keeping in mind that the seed packages are either British or American, so you have to do the sort of modify for your own brain. But you know what? I remember talking about this. I'm going to show you. See this? This is the Gardener's Journal. It's an actual book. The Toronto and Golden Horseshoe Gardener's Journal. It's put out every year around Christmas time. You can still get them, TBG online. This is the 31st edition. But the reason I'm bringing it up is they have this cool little calculation. It's the last frost date, the average last spring frost date calculator. So what you do is you figure out what is your, you can check it on the web, whatever, what's my average last spring frost date? And you put the little X in that week. And then you back up, you count your weeks back or forward, generally back, to decide when to plant.
Ah.
So for example, tomatoes will usually say something like, start these seeds indoors 6 weeks before the last spring frost.
Okay.
So once you've come up with your date, count back 6 weeks and say, oh, that's the week I should plant my tomato seeds. And I think you'll find most seed packages will say something to that effect.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay, I'm going to give out the numbers out because we have lots of room on the lines. Toronto number is 416-360-0740 or the toll-free number 1-866-740-4740. Give us a call with your indoor or outdoor gardening question. We will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stalks, phlox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yeah, I got to tell you, Charlie, that that theme music there gives me spring fever hearing about all those plants, many of which a number of which I have in my garden. I heard the lavender and next door has lupins. I'm getting all giddy.
Yes, giddy is a good word. So listen, just to go back to Wilma's question about petunias, she mentioned that she's got the seeds in the freezer. Wilma, I would take the seeds out of the freezer. They do need to be stored in a cool, dry location, dark, dry, cool, but not necessarily frozen. So I would get them out of the freezer, and it's not too late to grow them. We start petunia seeds about 10 weeks before the last spring frost. So I think your timing is good that way. Petunia seeds are tiny, tiny, tiny seeds. So when you're sowing them, be careful that you don't sort of drop a whole bunch of seeds in one small area in your planting container, because you'll just end up having to pull most of them out. You want to really just tiny little pinches of individual seeds. Sometimes people will mix tiny seeds with sand. There's that play sand we talked about. Mixed with sand, it's easier to sow. Tiny seeds, because it'll disperse them a little better. So there's different ways of getting the seeds out there in a way that separates them. I wouldn't hesitate to start those petunias. They can be stored for up to 5 years, apparently, so the viability is still good. But I'm not sure if the freezer is the optimal place to have them.
And how soon would do you figure that she would see whether or not they were surviving? They'd survive the freezer.
Well, if she provides a moist media with some heat from below and a little plastic wrap over top, she should see germination within 7 to 10 days.
Okie dokie.
If nothing grows within the 2 weeks of providing optimal conditions, then your seeds are toast.
Okay, you got it. Okay, let's go to Elaine, who's calling from Chatham, Ontario. Welcome to The Garden Show, Elaine.
Thank you so much. Well, we got hit by ice. And we had no power for about 20 hours and about 18 hours of ice falling on everything, and a lot of damage to some mature trees in our garden, and heartbreaking to see it.
Oh, no, that's not nice.
That's too bad.
We have a white cedar cluster in the middle of the yard. It's, I'd say, about 80 feet high, and one major section fell on our burning bush, which is about 10 feet in all directions, and flattened it like a pancake. But we got the wood off, and it miraculously bounced back, and there's some damage, of course, in the middle, but we'll reshape that. And a white pine, which held so much ice that mature branches were just ripping to the ground, and damaged a shed, but not the greenhouse. And it was surreal. And then after everything, we had to wait for all the ice to kind of fall off of everything with high winds. So it was unbelievable to see, and we'll just have to kind of care for the things that survived. But we had an arborist in that miraculously we could get somebody here, because almost every second house had a crew working. And in a couple of weeks, we'll see if the white pine can survive.
Oh, good for you. Yeah, it's very smart. I was going to say, make sure you've got an arborist or a nice sharp chainsaw and somebody who knows how to use it. And when you can, do the cleaning up from all that ragged breakage. You want clean cuts.
Yes, we hope to do that as our temperatures rise and we can get out there. And we'll turn all those down branches into mulch, which the company will do for us. And we'll put those to use in the garden. So full circle moment.
Okay, good. Well, thanks for sharing that. Did you have a question at all?
Not really. I enjoy all the questions that come up, and some of them I'm prepared for and know the answer, but we have four green thumbs here, and we do what we can, and we're members of our horticultural society, which I recommend everybody does.
Nice. Yeah, I agree. One of the best ways to meet fellow gardeners is through your local hort society.
Yeah. All right, we'll keep up the great show. Everyone.
Thanks for the call there, Elaine. And wow, that's a lot to to deal with. Yeah, that comes in like 24 hours. My goodness.
Ice storms are just so hard to watch the damage, watch the trees peeling down. You know, they talk about like a banana, right? Mm-hmm. Where, you know, we've had this a couple of times before I moved here into the county. There was a very bad ice storm. I think it was trying to remember, sort of turn of the century there, where Kingston got hit so badly, and the parks, the big old trees in the parks were just stripped. And, you know, Halifax has had the same thing, big ice storms. But we do know that with cleanup and proper care, these plants often survive. And, and you know, 5 years later, we forget that there was 4 inches of ice all over everything.
Yes. Speaking of care, you often mention that it should be a very sharp, clean cut when you're pruning. Why is that? Why is that so important?
Because the plant will be able to heal itself. When it's a ragged, jagged cut, it takes it doesn't actually heal. It rots away, and the rot, of course, will move in towards the center of the tree or the shrub, whatever it is. And if the plant is healthy enough, it sets up a barrier, like a scab underneath all that rottage, and eventually the rotten stuff drops away, and it's all healed. But it's a long, slow process, and you also run the risk of the fungus, which is causing that rot, to go right into the tree and then start killing it from inside. So cleaning up all that ragged, jagged breakage will allow the plant to do its thing, which is almost like forming a scab, like we would in the case of a damage to our skin. And believe it or not, take it right down to your lawn. You know, think of the blades of grass in your lawn. When you're cutting them, you get down on your hands and knees and look really close. And you look after you've mowed. Is it a clean cut that your grass is getting? Or is it all like a pinking shears? Like it's all ragged and jagged. If it's ragged and jagged, sharpen your blades. You don't want that. You want, because again, the grass will be much happier and look better and be greener and thicker and all that important stuff with clean cuts.
Okay, makes sense. Okay, have to take our last pause, but we'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, we are back with The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. I'm Dean Holland. And Charlie, we have Heather on the line, who's calling from Toronto. Welcome to The Garden Show, Heather.
Hello. I'm not only Heather from Toronto, I'm Heather from Riverdale.
Welcome, Heather.
Thank you. I thought I'd just call in and let you know that a meeting that Charlie's talking about is going to start at 7 o'clock on May the 8th, and it's only going to be a Zoom meeting this year. We have a shortage of technical help for this particular meeting. So if anybody is interested, they can find out what the link is by checking us on info@riverdalehorticultural.ca. I'll send you out the link if you do that. Once more, info@riverdalehorticultural.ca. And we're so glad that Charlie's coming to talk to us. Well, on Zoom anyway. Thank you, guys. Bye bye.
Great. Thanks, Heather.
Thanks, Heather. Yeah, and that actually, Heather said May the 8th. She meant March the 8th.
March the 8th, which is International Women's Day as well.
Exactly. It's perfect.
Yes, yes, it is perfect. Now, Charlie, I have a question. This is, as I mentioned before the show, my in-laws are visiting, and she walked in the door. She says, I have a problem. She has a pot of paper whites.
Oh, yeah.
That she's got, and they're apparently quite tall. They're about 15 inches high. She got them in a south window. They refuse to bloom. Now, it does sound to me like they might be a bit too wet. And so if she's overwatering them, not that I would accuse my mother-in-law of overwatering.
Careful, but
it does,
what you say.
Yeah, I know. It does sound very possible that it might be a little bit overwatered. But yeah, they've got these great green stalks, no blooms.
Yeah, but I doubt they're overwatered if they're alive, right?
Okay.
When you overwater bulbs, they just turn to mush.
Gotcha.
So my question to her would be, has she got them in soil? I assume she must.
I would think so. Yeah.
Could she have buried them deep into the soil? The trick with paper whites is they are a tropical bulb, and you don't even need to put them in soil. Remember your amaryllis growing in gravel?
Yeah.
Same idea. You could do that with paper whites. You just get a saucer. put a bunch of gravel in the saucer and sit the bulbs on top of the gravel and put water into the gravel. So again, it's the water needs to kiss the bottom of the bulb, but the bulb does not need to be underwater. So, or pot of soil, moist soil, sit the bulbs on top of the soil and they will grow. So I'm wondering if she's just buried them, like she planted them like a bulb, like a tulip or something, and put them down a couple inches under the soil, and she's getting lots of great leaves and not a lot of great flowers. So if she did that, I'd be inclined to pull the whole thing apart, get all that soil away from the bulbs, repot the, you know, keep them. Obviously, there's roots and stuff growing from those existing bulbs, but just get them up higher onto the surface of the soil, and they should flower.
Okay, gotcha. I've got an email here from Julia, a bougainvillea she's asking about. She says, my bougainvillea is in a cool, dark room. I may have watered it twice during the winter. There is no green, but it's starting to bloom. At what point should she cut it back?
Right. So good for you. It was smart to put the plant into a cool room, and it was smart to not water. Bougainvillea, again, tropical plant, if it lived in the tropics, it would have lots of warmth year-round and lots of sun and lots of humidity, but we don't have that in the winter. So what we tend to do is let our bougainvilleas go pretty dormant in the winter by giving them cooler temperatures, like, you know, 50 Fahrenheit, 10 Celsius kind of temperatures, and not watering really at all. And she mentions she's watered twice all winter. That's like perfect. The one thing that I'm not so happy about is the darkness. So the plant is still alive. And when it's still alive, to put it into the dark really forces it to go completely dormant. And of course, once it goes completely dormant, it can be hard to wake it back up again. So I suggest that she gets it out of the dark. And once she gets it out of the dark onto a sunny window, suddenly it's going to use more water because it's going to suddenly start to grow. Only prune as necessary at this time of year when it comes to bougainvillea. Yeah, I mean, if it's really one-sided or it's just really funny-looking plant, you're going to have to do some trimming back. But generally, the time to prune a plant like bougainvillea is in the fall. When we're bringing it in from outside, we're putting it, you know, basically into semi-dormancy for the winter, do your pruning back then. So for now, prune only as necessary, but do get it into some light. That also means the temperature is going to go up a bit, which is fine. It's time to wake that plant up. So warmer temperatures, lots of light, and the water will become more obvious. Water as necessary.
Okay. Last question before we scoot. Are you going to be starting any seeds this week or in the next coming week? Is there anything that you're going to be starting?
You know what I'm going to do? I am going to do some work on my houseplants. I have a jade plant that is so out of control, and it's just not a pretty thing. So I'm going to just tear the whole thing apart and make about 20 little plants or whatever I come up with. So I'm going to just do some kind of indoor care because I never get around to that stuff in the summer.
Okie dokie. Well, you have your work cut out for you.
I've got my week cut out. So thank you, Dean. Thank you, Carlos. Couldn't do any of this without the support of you people and, of course, the great callers. See you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.